Beginning in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. For the first week of August, this is the Rain Report. I'm Blair Alper, KA9SEQ. Many thanks to CQ Communications for underwriting audio bandwidth for the broadband stream of these Rain Reports. You'll find a link to their website off the opening screen of rainreport.com. For those dabbling in the more exotic communication modes on 6 meters, 50 to 54 megahertz, and above, the summer of 2004 will be remembered as one of the best in decades. The obvious question is, why this summer? And just where does this particular piece fit into the propagation puzzle? Rain founder-producer Hap Holly, KC9RP, sought answers to these vexing questions from propagation guru Thomas Hood, NW7US, propagation columnist for CQ, CQVHF, Popular Communications, and Monitoring Times.
Thomas, here we are in mid-summer of 2004 on the downside of Site 023. Are we more or less on schedule getting to the bottom in another few years?
Cycle 23 is progressing pretty close to the typical decline slope that we've seen in recent cycles. The exciting thing about going through a decline is that during periods where the sun gets very quiet, we might see flare-ups of activity. That's typical during the decline of any cycle. As the sun loses its energy, as it were, as it slows down and goes into those quiet years of solar minimum, we still see complex magnetic structures breaking away and spiraling away from the sun. And with that, of course, comes a lot of plasma, and that hits the Earth, and we see geomagnetic storms, and also the complex magnetic structures, as they're, in a sense, unfolding, they cause flaring periods. In the last few weeks, we have seen a rise in sunspot count. The solar flux, which is a reading in the 10.7 centimeter band, 2800 megahertz, we've seen that increase up to almost 180. So that's exciting for DXers, especially low VHF. We've even seen that enhancing transequatorial propagation and whatnot, raising the maximum usable frequencies. With that, of course, came a series of flares, some of them as high as what we call an X-class level flare. Flares are classified starting with the alpha, then the next range is the Bravo, then comes Charlie, then comes the Mike or M-class flare, and then finally the X-class flare. Each of those divisions is a range of intensity, A being the lowest intensity, X being the highest intensity. If you remember last November, on November 4th, 2003, we had the largest flare recorded by our scientific equipment since the 1970s when we started recording these flares, and actually they had to estimate it because it pegged the meter for nearly 20 minutes. The top of the scale at the time was an X17, but it just saturated for a length of time. So they estimated that it was an X28 class flare. That's extremely intense. Thankfully, it wasn't pointed at the Earth. It was pointed off to the side of the sun. But these flares the last few weeks reached about an X3 level, which is significantly lower than that particular record one in November. However, the steady series of flares has given opportunity for the sun to throw off a bunch of plasma toward the Earth, and we call that a coronal mass ejection, CME. So a few of these flares have produced what we call coronal mass ejections, which have arrived in such a way that right now we're going through a major storm. The planetary K index has reached a level of 8. Now that's triggered aurora, which is kind of unusual in the middle of a summer. Usually aurora is more active during the fall and the spring when we have a good position in our orbit around the sun. The tilting of the Earth is such that we favor the spring and the fall time for aurora. The aurora is the interaction of space particles, solar particles, that enter into our atmosphere through windows in the magnetosphere. When the sun is throwing off complex magnetic structures and it spins out away from the sun, that magnetic field interacts with the Earth's magnetic field. If you remember in science class, or maybe you've seen this in some textbook, if you take two magnets and you orientate them so the north pole of one magnet faces the north pole of the other, they tend to repel each other. But if south meets north, they attract each other. If you put iron fillings in a box and put these two magnets underneath, you'll see field lines, kind of like a donut shape, from north to south. Well, the sun's magnetic polarity and the Earth's magnetic polarity, in terms of these field lines, when they interact with each other, if north faces north, the two fields from the sun and the Earth are going to repel each other. And anything that's riding along those field lines will be pushed away. But if the sun's, what we call the interplanetary magnetic field, twists and orientates itself southward in relationship to our magnetosphere orientation, then those field lines combine. The big cloud of plasma that's spewing out with like a coronal mass ejection, that material is going to all of a sudden go and ride along our magnetosphere's field lines, which, if you remember the donut shape, they come in and converge to the north and south poles. Well, then we've got these big clouds of plasma raining in on our north pole and our south pole.
I'm speaking today with Thomas Hood, NW7US, the propagation columnist for CQ, CQVHF, and Popular Communications Magazines, and the quarterly propagation columnist for Monitoring Times. We'll be right back. This is the RAIN Report.
You're listening to RainReport.com, the only authorized internet source for RAIN audio.
As that cloud of plasma bombards the oxygen atoms and molecules and other gaseous molecules in our atmosphere, it breaks away electrons and causes photon emission. If you look at neon signs, that's a similar thing. You've got a glass tube filled with plasma. You put energy through that, and you cause photon emission. And depending on which gas you cause that photon emission, you get color. So certain, like oxygen produces a certain color, so forth. So that's what gives us the colorful aurora, is this photon emission that's taking place as this energy creates the photon phenomenon.
And what kind of propagation do auroras create?
Well, as that interaction is taking place that we see visually, there's also an ionization taking place. The level of that ionization is typically in the E layer. We can see some highly ionized E layer clouds produced in the auroral zone, and that raises the maximum usable frequency in those regions. VHFers typically see the ability to work a backscatter or a skewed angle off of these highly ionized E layer regions around the auroral oval and work what we call the aurora propagation mode. Now on HF, however, it's going to cause perhaps some degradation in the fact that the rest of the geomagnetic activity that's taking place is causing most of the ionosphere around the Earth to act much like it would if that part of the ionosphere were in darkness. We call that recombination. It quiets the ionosphere down or depresses it in such a way that the maximum usable frequencies in general decrease by as much as 20% during a major storm. Those who use shortwave radio will typically see during a geomagnetic storm generally a long-term radio fade out. The higher bands get really lousy, the lower bands get marginal, and the lowest bands are usable, but if it's a really severe storm, even the low bands can become marginal in their ability to propagate long-distance communications or even regional communications, depending on how you're orientating your signal. Unlike a flare, when just a standard flare takes place, any kind of X-ray flare, even if it's very intense, affects us within 8 minutes because solar radiation in the form of X-rays and ultraviolet hits us at the speed of light, and that's about 8 minutes. That causes a blackout for maybe 5 minutes, maybe a half hour, maybe an hour at the most, depending on how severe the flare was. And that's only on the sunlit side of the Earth, because that radiation's coming in where we face the sun. On the other side, on the dark side, that radiation hasn't hit, so it doesn't affect nighttime propagation, a flare. But these coronal mass ejections, which hit us and cause these long-term geomagnetic storms, again, the geomagnetic activity causes the whole ionosphere to become depressed and to recombine, you know, all those electrons that were broken away from the molecules and atoms in the ionosphere begin to slow down and reattach themselves to any nearby atom or molecule. That's what we call recombination, and that lowers the maximum usable frequency. So geomagnetic storms can last for days, but the VHFer loves this because the aurora increases and it gives exotic modes of communication.
Speaking of exotic modes, tell me about the sporadic E event that occurred earlier this summer.
Sure. We're seeing some continual excitement here in North America. This year is particularly active in North America, while Europe is seeing some marginal activity this year as compared to, say, last year, where it's seen some exciting continual openings.
This has been part one of Hap Holly's interview with Thomas Hood, NW7 US, propagation columnist for CQ, CQVHF, Popular Communications, PopCom, and Monitoring Times. We'll conclude this program about the current state of solar cycle 23 next time. The Rain Report is copyright 2004 Rain, all rights reserved. I'm Blair Alper, KA9 SEQ.